Welcome back. I'm Deb Hutton, along with my friend Bob Reed. We're filling in for Reshmi Nair, who's on vacation today, but he'll be back here at 2 o'clock tomorrow. It's that time of the day for our science expert, Dan Riskin. Dan, welcome to The Rush.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
We're good.
Doing well, Dan. I was very excited because I read this too quickly about your first item. At first, I thought it was a hangover cure pill that scientists are working on. But no, I jumped the gun a bit. Although it's kind of in the same league, right?
It is in a similar league. And I should be clear, it doesn't exist yet. But they've made steps toward a sober up pill. So this would be a pill that you could pop that would make the effects of alcohol just go away much faster than they do currently. And it comes from some experiments they were doing with mice. So it's cool because we think of alcohol as a human thing, like humans drink alcohol, but the animals don't. And for the most part, that's true. But the thing is that any animal that eats fruit or nectar is sometimes going to end up eating a fruit that's fermented. And if it's fermenting, it's going to produce alcohol. And so it's often quite true that animals come into contact with alcohol, and some animals can get drunk as a result of this. And so if you look across animals, you find all kinds of biochemical systems that are built to deal with the effects of alcohol. And so that's what they're looking at here. They looked at some mice and they noticed that when mice consume ethanol, alcohol, that they actually produce this hormone that they call FGF21, fibroblast growth factor 21. And in this study, they looked at what the effects of this hormone are. And to make a long story medium length now, when you inject a mouse with this hormone, it sobers up twice as fast as a mouse that you have not injected with the hormone. And if you block the ability of that hormone to act in a mouse, it stays drunk much longer. So this is a promising sort of molecule that might someday be in a pill that people could take on their way home from the bar so they don't feel quite so drunk when they get home.
Would it have an impact for people who are struggling with alcohol addiction?
Great question. It's unclear what this would do in terms of its effect on a human. I mean, we've got it on in the mice, and we think that its primary candidate function in a human would be to help sober up when you're drunk. Whether it would also cause people to want to have alcohol less is possible. So one of the things that happened in mice is that when they were given this hormone, they wanted to drink less alcohol and they wanted to drink more water. And so that's kind of a cool result because those behaviors will actually help you sober up, which fits into the whole idea that this is a natural thing that's secreted by the body when it's had too much alcohol to help the body know what to do. So very promising in that regard, but unclear how it would help. Not clear what it would do on the front end to prevent the alcohol consumption. Not clear what it would do on the back end to help get rid of that hangover, whether it would have a function there. And importantly, it's not breaking down the alcohol for the mice. It's just helping the brain overcome the effects of the alcohol. So when you give it more of the hormone, it's still got just as much alcohol in its system, but it's able to act sober more quickly, which I think is a very interesting difference.
I think they need one more aspect to the research, and that is, were the mice who didn't want to drink as much watching a hockey game at the time or not? That could be a very important control factor that I think.
Yes, and was their team winning or losing? Yes, right. These are important questions that will come. We'll get to those.
Okay.
So I'm just going to say this one straight because my reaction is, but women's bodies are more efficient at carrying babies than those of men. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a cool study. I mean, there are obviously there's a lot of overlap between, you know, the shapes and sizes of men and women. But in general, men tend to have a slightly different shape than women do. Women have wider hips. Men tend to be taller. There are all these, the center of gravity for women tends to be lower than it is for men. There are all these differences that, you know, there's overlap, but in general, that's true. And it's also in general true that in a lot of cultures around the world, women are the ones who are carrying the kids around or carrying the babies around, not as much men. And one assumption is that through our evolutionary history, that's probably been the case. And I think you can argue about that, but I think there's pretty good evidence that for the last 100,000 years and longer, women have been carrying the kids around more. So you would expect that if you compared the efficiency of baby carrying between men and women, you would expect that evolution has helped women become more efficient at carrying kids. And so there's this cool study out of Washington State where they had moms and dads of young kids carry their babies with a ergo baby sling, either on the front or on the side or on the back for different trials. And they had these people walk through the woods over a trail, not on the sidewalk, but like, a hike with a kid on. And they were wearing a mask that measured oxygen consumption. And then they compared that to how much it cost for those same people to do those same hikes without a kid. And what they found is that, you're not going to be surprised, but women are more efficient at carrying kids. Their metabolic rate goes up much less when they're carrying a baby compared to when a man is carrying a baby. And it's apparently because of how wide the hips are and how much stability that gives when you're walking over rough terrain, also because of that lower center of mass. But the way that women are built, it costs less energy for them to carry a kid than it does for a man to carry a kid.
It's funny. I remember when my kids were little and I would find myself standing in line without the kid, but still assuming the pose, hip off to the side, because you got so used to putting your baby on your hip for me that I realized like that was my standard pose.
Yes, I know. I totally know what you mean. I have a very fond memory of when I had my first, so I have three kids. I had twins on the second round, and carrying twins is a whole other thing. They didn't get into that. But when we had one baby, I remember I was talking to my wife on the phone while I was at work and I could hear the crying in the background and I started bouncing. You know that bouncing you do when you're holding a baby? I was bouncing my phone. Just it's funny how the instincts just kick in.
Well, from carrying kids around to literally carrying a baby when you're pregnant, there's some advice about trying to get a better night's sleep.
Yeah, no, this is really striking. And I'm surprised not to see this more in the news, because I think if you know anybody who's pregnant, you might want to put this on their radar. This was a study done in the States. And one of the things you worry about with pregnancies is gestational diabetes, which is where the blood sugar levels get out of control. And that can be a real complication for a lot of women. And it's not that rare. It's about 5% of pregnant women in Canada that have gestational diabetes. And so preventing that would be great. And it seems to be on the rise. At least U.S. data suggests that it's on the rise year to year. So there was a big study trying to figure out what is correlated with gestational diabetes. And so they had these women, these 700 plus women, that they were tracking for a week very closely. They had them wearing wrist monitors so they could measure how much they were moving, when they were sleeping, all that stuff. And the wrist monitor happened to have a light sensor on it. And when they crunched the data, it didn't matter how bright it was during the day. It didn't matter how bright it was at night. But if you look at the 3 hours before bedtime, the women that are exposed to lots of light before they go to bed were 4 to 5 times more likely to have gestational diabetes, which is just a huge effect. And it's just something that, I think a lot of people didn't see coming. There has been some evidence to suggest that that melatonin and light levels and looking at your phone before bed, that can play a role with sugar metabolism and can, downstream have something to do with diabetes, but to find that big an effect in these pregnant women was really quite shocking.
And what is the cause of it?
Well, it's melatonin is secreted as part of the going to bed thing that you do. And one of the things that we do to shoot ourselves in the leg before we go to bed every night is that we all look at our phones. And basically, a lot of that light hitting our eyeballs messes up your brain, because your brain thinks if it's light, it must be daytime. And I'm not going to sleep in the daytime. And so your brain is trying to deal with it. And so there's more and more evidence that for all of us, avoiding screens in the hour or two, or in this study, 3 hours before bed can be beneficial for getting a good night's sleep. But there are all these other health effects that are correlated with getting a good night's sleep that are also affected. But here it shows that pregnant women may be especially vulnerable to the effects of a light before bed. And so in the study, it wasn't clear whether these women were using phones or tablets or TVs, or if it was just the light in the room or who knows what, but it just measured the overall brightness of the light. And they found that for moderate light compared to almost no light, it was a 4 times higher effect. And when you had a bright light compared to the low light levels, it was a 5 times higher effect. So the more light, the worse it was. And so pregnant women and the rest of us should be thinking about cutting down on lights before bed. But when you're waking up in the morning, go ahead and look at your phone, because that helps you wake up.
Dan Riskin, we're always the richer for when you visit and take us through the world of science and the lessons that it holds. Thanks so much.
Well, you're very kind. Have a good one. Thanks a lot.
All right. When we come back on The Rush, we will check in with the Washington Post's Russia correspondent on the ramifications of the leader of China arriving in Moscow today for a meeting with Vladimir Putin and the potential repercussions from all of that. It's Bob Reed and Deb Hutton in for Reshmi Nair on The Rush on News Talk 1010. Stay with us.